And welcome to another edition of National Football Authority Radio. I am your host, Matt Baxendale, and it is a pleasure to have everybody hanging out with us here today. We got a huge show on tap, just 2 weeks away from the Super Bowl. The Giants, the Patriots, the rematch of one of the greatest Super Bowls that we ever saw a few years ago between these two teams when the Giants ruined the Patriots' run at perfection. So we're looking forward to talking about the Super Bowl here, but we've also got a huge interview on tap. We're going to be joined by Chris Gore. He's with G4 TV's Attack of the Show. He's the host of the DV Tuesday, and he's the founder of FilmThreat.com. So you're going to be having a lot of fun here talking about football, talking about football movies. We're going to be talking about the Super Bowl. And on top of that, Chris is a Lions fan. So this year must have been nothing but nirvana for him when it came to those poor, dilapidated blue guys from the city of Detroit. So we're looking forward to having him on here. He's also I guess you can't really call him the host of the Podcrash, considering he's too lazy to actually host his own show. And we're going to get that interview in a moment here with Chris Gore from G4 TV. But first, let's talk about some football news here, beginning with the passing of a legend. Will there ever be a more mixed legacy left behind than the one that Joe Paterno leaves behind after passing away this past weekend at age 85 from lung cancer? Now, there's two sides of this equation. On one hand, you have the guy who led Division 1A football in career wins. You have a guy who won two national championships, who was at Penn State for 50 years as a capacity as either a head coach or as an assistant coach. He went undefeated 5 times. He had 350 NFL players. Thousands of players go through Penn State on his watch. He donated millions of dollars to Penn State University. Their campus library's name is the Joe and Sue Paterno Library. That should tell you everything you need to know about how big Joe Paterno was. To everybody involved in Penn State who's a diehard believer in Joe, he was an icon and a saint. Then again, to those who were his detractors during that time period, they still called him Saint Joe because they believed he couldn't be as good as he made himself out to be. Now, all the stuff that came out with the Jerry Sandusky, it's horrible. I call it the horribleness, is the way I've described this incident in State College. Because I don't know if we'll ever see a worse scandal involved in college sports. Because this really isn't a sports scandal. It's a criminal scandal. It's a complete lack of responsibility from somebody in charge at Penn State, whether it was Paterno, whether it was the athletic directors. But what we do know is that there were children who were hurt on Penn State's football campus. That's unacceptable, because you're talking about the safety of children. And Joe Paterno saw himself as an educator. One of the things I haven't mentioned yet is how great Penn State saw themselves as an academic university. And frankly, as Penn State football improved its fortunes on the field under Joe Paterno, the college itself grew. Penn State went from a cow college, and by Joe Paterno's own words, he called it a cow college when he got there. Well, Penn State now is one of the 4 or 5 biggest schools in the entire country. And they have one of the biggest endowments in the country. Penn State University is one of the best academic institutions in the entire country. And a lot of that success and a lot of the money that helped build that success can be directly correlated to the fact that Penn State football became a national brand. And that's all credit to Joe Paterno. Yet how do you overlook those Jerry Sandusky allegations? And let's face it, most of America's already convicted him. When you have a dozen victims come forward, it's kind of hard to not see the writing on the wall here. So innocent until proven guilty, but this is really, really bad. And a lot of people, and I'm one of them, I've said this before, I think Joe Paterno absolutely failed in his responsibility to report this to campus police the second Mike McQuarrie came to him having seen something in the showers. And now Joe Paterno protested that it wasn't his responsibility, that he had gone to his chain of command. But that's just unexcusable, because Joe Paterno was the man in charge in Penn State. He was the guy in charge in Happy Valley. He was a benevolent dictator. Pretty much he didn't have to worry about a chain of command. He should have gone to police himself. On the flip side of the coin, something we may never know is whenever Jerry Sandusky retired abruptly in 1999, was Paterno part of a cover-up for Jerry Sandusky to be on the road recruiting for the Nittany Lions? That's something we're never going to be able to ascertain. And now that Joe Paterno has passed away, it's something he's never going to be able to defend. Look, his last public image that we saw of him was an interview with the Washington Post, where he had lost his hair from cancer. He could barely speak above a whisper. And he was filled with regret at the way that his tenure had ended at Penn State. Joe Paterno, unfortunately, is never going to have the chance to defend his actions because he passed away. And let me be real clear here. I hate cancer with an absolute passion. My dad's been fighting brain cancer for almost 8 years. I hate cancer more than I probably hate anything else in this world. If cancer was a tangible object in front of me right now, I'd punch it in the face and I'd punch it repeatedly. F you, cancer. That's all I got to say about that. So my condolences go out to the Paterno family, because anytime you lose a loved one, it's a tragedy. And I think that's something that can't be forgotten here, is the human aspect of this, is that he was a father, he was a husband, he was a grandfather. And to many people, he still is an icon. In fact, Joe Paterno's legacy, we're never going to really be able to know. Maybe in 5 years we can talk about it, but his legacy to everybody involved at Penn State who believed in him today, well, they still believe in him. He's still St. Joe. And they feel he got a raw deal. And they're still trying to reconcile what Joe Paterno espoused, all that academic success, all that success on and off the football field, all the young men who came through his program and improved themselves on and off the field and improved their communities because of Joe Paterno. Look, even if Joe Paterno's a fraud, which I'm not saying that I think Joe Paterno's a fraud at all. I don't know. But a lot of people are convinced he's a fraud. Well, even if you agree with that Joe Paterno's a fraud, and all he did was just putting a nice veneer on the necessary evils of college football, it's hard to deny all of the good people who have came out of the Penn State program, and all the Penn Staters who, even if they didn't play football there, believed in what Joe Paterno was preaching. So even if Joe Paterno was a fraud, and I'm not saying he is, but let's say he was a fraud. Well, his fraud brought a heck of a lot of good to this world. And it's a shame that in the end, there was one unbelievable miscarriage of responsibility and judgment when it came to Jerry Sandusky. Joe Paterno's ultimate legacy? Talk to me in 5 years. Talk to me in 5 years when we have more idea of what was going on here, when we're sure that Paterno wasn't involved in a cover-up, when all this is sort of cooled and we can look at it with a level head. Right now, I think the only thing we can say is rest in peace to an icon and a family man and an educator, because those things were undoubtedly true about Joe Paterno. And we'll leave the rest to the future. So rest in peace, Joe Pa. We'll probably never see another guy like you. All right, well, I've had enough of sad stuff. I've had enough talking about child abuse scandals. I've had enough about legends passing away. I've had enough about a grieving community. Let's move on to something more fun here. And, of course, I'm talking about our interview with Chris Gore from G4 TV's Attack of the Show. It's coming up next here on National Football Authority Radio. We're going to bring Chris on. We're going to talk about movies. We're going to talk about football. And, of course, we're going to also bring in the founder himself, Daniel Wolf, here from National Football Authority. And we're going to be talking about the Super Bowl. And one thing you're not going to want to miss is our discussion of the best commercials all time from the Super Bowl and what we're expecting this year from the big game. Stick around. Coming up next, talking about the Super Bowl with Chris Gore, G4 TV, here at National Football Authority Radio. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to National Football Authority Radio. NationalFootballAuthority.com. The shooting star of football coverage on the internet.
Well, we're joined here today on National Football Authority Radio by Chris Gore. He's with G4 TV, the Attack of the Show. He's the host of the DB Newsday, and of course, he's the host of the Pod Crash Podcast. Well, I guess, can we call you a host, Chris? I mean, you know, you kind of just crash other people's podcasts. How does that work?
The whole premise is that I'm too lazy to do a podcast, so I just appear on other people's podcasts, and then I play the highlights on my own podcast. And I didn't want to be limited just talking about movies. People mostly know me as a movie guy on Attack of the Show on G4, and I'm not just, you know, this gives me an opportunity to talk about, you know, film and comic books and and video games and music and also sports. Because it's a weird thing about sports. Like, I'm a big geek. I'm a longtime nerd geek. And there's a huge divide between people who are nerds and then when I also say I like sports, people look at me, my geeky nerdy friends look at me like, that's crazy talk. What are you talking about? There's really not it's a tough thing to find that gene in both. Like, I like Batman comics. I also like the National Football League. You know what I mean? Like, it's weird.
You know, it sounds like you're a modern Renaissance man in a lot of ways. You're dabbling in a little bit of everything, but I think we're kindred spirits there because, you know, I'll sit here and quote Lord of the Rings as much as you want to talk about football, so we can run right ahead with that. But, Chris, I guess let's start off with mixing a little bit of football film together here. We were looking over some of your stuff, and one of the articles we found from you was a top 10 football movies of all time, so let's mix a little bit of the cinema and the gridiron here together. And the list I found from you said the number one football movie of all time for you was The Longest Yard. Is that still the case?
It's absolutely the case. And when I say The Longest Yard, let's be very clear. This is the 1974 original with Burt Reynolds.
What, not the one with Adam Sandler?
Yeah, exactly. And I have to say that, like, I like some of Adam Sandler's older, funnier films, but Longest Yard is such a classic. What's so funny is I defy you when you flip by, you know, that movie on cable or whatever, if it's just playing and you're seeing anything, whether it's the beginning, the middle, end, you will not change the channel. That movie is still engaging up to today. And, I mean, just that whole thing of it, I think we broke his friggin' neck. I think we broke his friggin' neck. I mean, it was just so awesome to see that, you know, rather than the swear word, that word became better when it aired on regular television, the word friggin'. I'm not sure exactly if that movie invented, you know, created that term friggin', but it's just a classic that holds up, and it also has all the elements. And also has a believable, you know, when you're casting someone, an actor, to play in a sports movie, you have to really believe that they can do that part. And you believe Burt Reynolds could be kind of that, you know, he's got that cocky attitude. He could be a great quarterback. And you also kind of see him, you could see him being a jerk, like, in the beginning of the film before he goes.
Well, you know, Burt Reynolds' backstory from Florida State, right? He was Lee Corso's roommate at Florida State. And Lee Corso was, of course, one of the three guys in ESPN's College Game Day. So Burt Reynolds has a little bit of football history.
Yeah. So I mean, you completely buy him in that role. And also, it has, like, so much drama. I mean, it's taking already, I love sports movies just in general as a genre, because as a genre with a sports movie, a lot of sports movies are very cliche, but I keep saying I love that movie. I like that kind of movie because, you know, you either win or you lose, just like the result of any sporting event. You either win or lose the game, but in a sports movie, by losing the game, sometimes you really win, like in films like The Bad News Bears. You know, they lost, but they really won. Or like in Rocky, you know, he lost, you know, the first match with Apollo Creed, but really he won respect. And that was more important than winning that fight. So that's why I personally happen to love sports movies. And Longest Yard, I defy you. Like, okay, you know, you guys are the NFL experts. I would like to hear what you think of the choices on my list.
Well, first of all, let me add this. I love Burt Reynolds, and as an Archer diehard, having Burt Reynolds on Archer last week was like a highlight for me, because Burt Reynolds is cool in anything. But looking at your list here, some of the things that stood out to me was not an NFL connection as much, but where the heck is the program on this list?
I'll say this. The program's on the list because at the time that I made this list, which the list that you're looking at is got to be like a couple years
1995 is what it says here.
Yeah. Let's just say my list of the top 10 football movies, the one that we're discussing right now, it's old. It's more than a 10-year-old list. So at the time, like, you know, that's when that came out, but you know, one that I would add that makes no sense, but you know, maybe you'll back me up, is the movie Rollerball, the original with James Caan.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's not a football movie in the sense they're not playing football, but it's so much based on the NFL, just the camaraderie, the way the teams are laid out, and it's sort of the perfect marriage of, for me, science fiction and sports. And I mean, the way they play the game, even like the big shoulder pads, I mean, they're playing football, just happens to be in a roller rink to make it kind of futuristic. I would count Rollerball as a football movie. I would probably put that at number two. I would rewrite this list. I apologize that you had to Google search and find the list I wrote in 1995. But Rollerball I would put as number two, absolutely.
Would Starship Troopers be on this list? Do they play football in that?
Yeah, they actually do. They do kind of play a version of football in that. But it's not the dominant part of that whole movie.
I'm just upset with you.
I should put together another list of sports themes in other movies. You know, there's a lot of films where you see really good, really cool sports themes.
You see it all the time, though. It's the same thing is like, you know, we see a group coming together and they're in the face of adversity, and then they have to join together in one triumphant moment to overcome the odds. I mean, that's the sports movie's theme right there.
That absolutely is, and that's why it really bugs me when I talk to my geeky, nerdy friends, and they make fun of me for being a sports fan. So it's like I can't win, you know, because I'm growing up as a long-time geek. I mean, yes. Okay, I was not so good at sports, but I love watching them. And the way I try to explain it, it's like watching a great documentary like unfold live. You know, it's like you have no idea what's going to happen, and it's the drama. It's also like for me, like the NFL. I believe that the NFL is the type of sport that women like more than any other sport, because the way that they explain and set up the story and what's going on with between teams, coaches, and all the rich history. You know, of competition between whoever happens to be playing that night. I really believe if you talk to any woman, ask what's their favorite sport, it's gonna be the NFL.
Hey, you know what? Here's the thing, Chris, and I'll make a comparison for you. You can tell me whether or not you think it's valid. To me, the most sports-themed movie I can think of that isn't actually a sports movie, Gladiator, Russell Crowe. To me, that has every theme of a sports movie. And with the NFL, I think they're kind of modern-day gladiators in a lot of ways. So to me, there's so many parallels there. What do you think of that?
I think that is a perfect observation. I love that. I mean, because also, if you think about it, like, that was really the first – it was sports back then. I mean, you know, maybe they didn't respect life and death so much, that sort of – you know, life was cheap back then. So, people die in the arena, but that was really ultimately the first sport. And really, think about it, football to today, and I'm also a big hockey fan growing up in Detroit, football and hockey are kind of in tie for the most brutal sports. I mean, really.
Collision sports. I said they're collision sports. There's only three sports that are classified as collision sports: football, hockey, and lacrosse.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, no, it's absolutely right. And it's just like, but in Gladiator, you're right. I mean, those are really the first sporting events, the spectacle. And just as someone who, like, every year I try to see one NFL game live, just because I want to recapture that experience. And it's just from the tailgating to the drinking to the hanging. I love the whole scene. I like hanging out with, I've brought signs to stadiums before. You know, like, I really get into, like, just being a fan and being among other sports fans. You know, there's something, there's a camaraderie there that
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely, it captures the zeitgeist of an area. And now you're a Detroit Lions fan, so I'm going to tell you a quick story about a game I went to that involved the Detroit Lions, and then we'll talk about one of the games you've been to recently, especially since you're in L.A. and you don't have an NFL team, so I don't know how the heck you're doing it. But
I drive down to San Diego. I can get to San Diego, too.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that's not too far. Well, here's my quick Lions story, and then we'll move on to the NFL from more recent times. Back when the Steelers won their first Super Bowl this decade, which was actually played in Detroit, the final game of the regular season for the Steelers was at home on New Year's Day against the Detroit Lions. And now, my dad and I got tickets to this game, and we sat in the absolute top row of Heinz Field. We were in row XX. Like, I felt, like, almost guilty, like we were going to, like, the strip club at the very skeezy top of the stadium. That's how far from the field we were. But we were sitting next to, and I couldn't believe it, I was sitting next to a Detroit Lions fan and his girlfriend, and they had a big sign that said, Mr. Clay, Mr. Ford, sell the team. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen, because there's no way he was going to be on TV. Pretty much encapsulated how Lions fans felt with all their struggles. So I guess I'm going to throw this one to you. Have you ever taken a sign to the stadium in Detroit and said, please, just sell the team?
I haven't said that, but the one thing I do know about, just as a kid, like watching Detroit, and I think the closest they got to the Super Bowl was when Barry Sanders went on the team. This is 92. They went to the NFC Conference Championship game and lost against Dallas. I think Troy Aikman was playing. So I'm not a fan of Troy Aikman, and I'm not a fan of Dallas because of that. I will always root against Dallas. I don't care. I will always root against them no matter what.
Well, I think that's just natural. Nobody likes the Cowboys.
Yeah, that's true. That is a national hate, like the Yankees in New York. But I feel like Detroit has a saying about the Lions: it's not over till we lose. And I know. I feel this season, because this season they showed so much promise. I mean, just the fact that they got to a playoff game and they were competitive, up until the third quarter things started to fall apart. But they were competitive. They're a young team. It's also just to see them get this far. It's like they haven't been this good since the early 90s. But it that is super exciting. But yeah, Detroit is sort of they would literally be up by 3 touchdowns, and I go, okay, how are we going to blow this? How are we going to blow this game? Come on, Detroit. You know you can blow this. And they would blow 3 touchdown leads, and it was happening constantly. The consistent, and it's the guy who's the only, I own a Detroit Lions jersey, and it's for Jason Hansen, the kicker. And it's for 2 reasons. One, he's a consistent guy. He's always been there. I don't know statistically, but he's got to be the top scorer because he's so, so good. But also, got the number 4 on it, and I'm also a fan of the Fantastic Four, the comic book and the those characters. So the Fantastic Four are my favorite. And on the very back of it, it says Mr. Fantastic. He's kind of my hero reading comic books. So it's sort of one part of the Detroit Lions jersey, and second part, a nod to the comic that was my favorite comic book growing up as a kid. But it's just good to get this far. But you really, when you talk to anyone who's a Lions fan, they kind of bow their head and go, yeah, I know, long-suffering Lions fan. But my dad remembers when they, won the championship in the 50s, but I don't know, it's hard to count when we live in this age of, the Super Bowl. I mean, the Super Bowl is the thing. I mean, what can I say?
Well, we bring a National Football Authority founder, Daniel Wolf, on here in a little bit. He's a Browns fan. He can commiserate, too, because Browns fans have never been to a Super Bowl either. So, they certainly have their trouble. And another funny thing, most Browns fans I know, and I went to Ohio State, so I'm friends with a lot of Browns fans. A lot of them have Phil Dawson jerseys right now because he's the only Brown they can see being there in 2 years. So, you got to be smart with your money, I guess. But here's one other thing about the Lions this year that stood out to me. This is so far from when they ended a season 2 or 3 years ago by encouraging fans to show up in Bengals gear because they didn't want to support the Lions that badly. Do you remember that?
there's always something. Whenever I talk to my dad, he'll tell me, those Lions. I can feel him shaking his head as I'm shaking mine. Yeah. I mean, it's sad, but I feel like now they're turning around. I mean, Matt Millen was a huge mistake. I mean, I don't know what he was doing.
Hey, he drafted 50 wide receivers. You got them.
Yeah, but we got to give the quarterback time. We got to give him time to throw the ball. It's all about getting the right balance. I mean, it's so complicated, which is why I'm a big fan of playing the Madden games, on Xbox. But I couldn't play fantasy football because I know if I start to play that, it'll be like crack. I'll just keep playing it, and that's all I'll do. But if I could just divert on a subject for a second, but I found a guy years ago on eBay who was selling, because we were talking about the Super Bowl, I found this guy on eBay who sold old copies of the Super Bowl on VHS, okay? And I bought a whole bunch of them. I've got almost all the Super Bowls. I'll record them, and I'll just save a copy of it. So I have, copy of Super Bowl III, right, in its original presentation, and this is the one where Joe Namath won, he made the guarantee and whatnot.
Beat the Colts.
With the Jets. Oh, yeah, beat the Baltimore Colts. And what's awesome about this VHS tape, it also has the commercials on it.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God, the original commercials. And what's also crazy about this is I keep saying I want to have a Super Bowl party. What I want to do is show one of these really old Super Bowls and then tell my friends to show up and dress from, the 60s or the 70s, and then everybody, and then take bets on the game. Not necessarily the score because, you could Google the score, but, who wins the coin toss, Who scores the first
prop bet?
You could actually, you could still look up those stats, but, gosh, you could lay bets on that. I think that would be a really fun way to do a Super Bowl party, to actually show a Super Bowl from, 20 years ago and then make everybody dress like the period. I mean, I feel like they do those throwback jerseys sometimes, at games just to mix things up.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. That's something you could totally pull off with all the prop bets. I mean, you see it with Super Bowls every year. You know, like, will the national anthem go over under $1.50? You know, who heads or tails on the coin flip? Will there be a safety? There's all kinds of stuff. And, you know, the Google will give you the score, but I don't know if they'll give you the details like that. You may have just created a underground fantasy football movement that's going to cost a lot of people money, huh?
Hook, I will hook you up because I've got a full crate box of all. I've got even like old AFC, NFC Conference Championship games, which, as we both know, AFC, NFC Conference Championship games are always the better game. No matter
what.
It's the Super Bowl is filled with so much pomp and circumstance, so much, you know, of the, you know, the Doritos coin toss and the Tostitos this, and it's so over-commercialized that, first of all, it makes me hungry. Secondly, it makes me want to have some beer, which I'm going to drink anyway. But, like, thirdly, it slows down the game, and it actually gets infuriating, so that the conference championship games are just much better football, because I feel like the big battle is to get into the Super Bowl itself. So what's also great about these tapes, because I'll have to send you some of these tapes. The funny thing is that when you watch them, the presentation is so unsophisticated. I mean, this old game from Super Bowl III, it looks like an airing of a high school football game on local cable television. It's got little transparencies. The guys are just killing time. The game, also the pace of the game, so much slower. So you really not only the game difference, the presentation looks crude by comparison. You've got graphics out, and the graphics get really irritating, where you have robots coming up from the field and arrows going all over the place, and it's like
even the basic stuff, the bottom line with the scores and stats, that stuff never even existed until like 10 years ago.
Show me where he has to get to make the first down. I don't need any other lines. Everything else is overkill. You know, it's too much, and then it just gets irritating.
I agree with you completely.
I got to get you some of these, because these things look so great. It's just them being uninterrupted. So with those commercials, you really it sort of puts you back in that era. It reminds me why I fell in love with football, watching it as a kid with my dad.
You know, here's a question for you. We were talking about uninterrupted football games, and nothing beats the uninterrupted experience of being a fan actually live at the game. We touched on this earlier, but we'd actually get onto it. When was the last time you went to an NFL game? I mean, you said you went to San Diego, since there's no teams in Los Angeles now?
Yeah. This is a couple years ago. I try to go to an NFL game every year, but a couple years ago. I'll tell you the best game to go, actually, if you want tickets to see, you know, a game at Qualcomm Stadium, see the Chargers, is anytime the Raiders are playing. The Raiders
so
are
they're fans?
Because season ticket holders, because they hate Raider fans so much, season ticket holders of the Chargers will sell them. So I went there, and look, I'm a guy who I love to have fun. I don't have a dog in this fight. I just want to see a big game. And what's amazing is you walk through there, it's freaking tailgate tent city with all of the, you know, with all the Raiders fans there, and they come from, I mean, they come from everywhere. So
those are the guys from the Rollerball movie.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like all the guys from the Rollerball movie or the Road Warrior. You know, all they're going into battle, but you know, I'm just there with a sense of fun. I'm walking around, having a good time, and there is something that's a blast left at. But and I've gotten club level seats before, but actually, I prefer something like closer to the field. You can actually hear stuff going on. I mean, the club level is nice, but I feel like it's like there's all this stuff with all the service and everybody being nice to each other. I want to be where people are yelling.
You know, that's the funny thing, too, is when you get to the cheap seats, it's where you get to see the really drunk fans just getting into random fights for no good reason, throwing beer in each other's faces. The next thing you know, you got 15 cops trying to break up a brawl. It's one of the funniest things, as long as you're not in the middle of it.
Yeah, as long as you're not in the middle. I mean, I've had beer spilled on me from being close to an altercation, but I've never been a part of one, just because it's like, look, we're all sports fans. It's like, you know what? And also, if I'm there and my team loses and there's someone from the opposing team and they got a jersey, I'll just say, you know what? Congratulations, good game, or you got to give it up. Like, there's certain teams where it's like, you know, like I was a big fan of John Elway just because of his personal story. You know, I mean, his personal story was like a football movie. You know, here's the guy who went to the Super Bowl, what, like three times and lost? And not only that, it was one of the most humiliating losses in Super Bowl history.
Yeah, he got drilled three times.
Oh, my God. And then to stay in it. And at the age that he was at, I'm not giving up. And you know, and then to beat, I think it was a Super Bowl 32 when he beat the Green Bay Packers. Brett Favre's second trip to the Super Bowl. And oh my God, he was incredible. I mean, that just gave me chills. So I became an Elway fan. I mean, I really liked that team. I really felt that there was a respect. You know, they would do the salute. I mean, it was that team was magical. You know, that really was. And it was just something out of a movie because of Elway's personal story. When you see how much adversity, and this is a guy that never quit. I mean, he had good years and bad years with that team, but the fact that he kept going back to the Super Bowl, losing, and then just not give up. I mean, that's a lesson for life. You know.
Oh yeah, I coach hockey myself down here in Atlanta, Georgia. And the lesson you always teach kids about sports is that it's a metaphor for life in so many ways. Like, if you're talking about your friends who don't get the whole sports thing, they're more the comic book type, they're more the music type. Sports is a metaphor for life. It's not about getting knocked down. It's about whether you get back up with a vengeance. And that's what John Elway ended up doing in his career, and his persistence paid off.
Oh, yeah, I mean, exactly. It's giving me chills actually thinking about Super Bowl 32 and how just crazy, insane that game was.
Yeah, that was a great football game. The one thing I think everybody sticks with in their head when they think of Super Bowl 32 with John Elway, the play he made inside the 10-yard line in the first half where he was diving for a first down and he got helicoptered around in a circle. And, like,
God.
He literally spun 360. Yeah,
Oh, my God. And then remember, Green Bay was driving at the end of that game and had a chance to win. And two of the guys on the defense – collided and got knocked out. You remember that?
Yes, I do.
Oh my God, I remember seeing that and just like the boom, two guys down. And I just thinking about it is amazing. I mean,
here, the mistake Elway made from a movie perspective is if that had been a movie, Elway would have announced his tearful retirement on the Super Bowl ceremony and held his trophy up in the air. Well, in real life, Elway came back for another year, and they won another Super Bowl because he knew the team was loaded, and they beat a bad Falcons team that their starting cornerback got arrested for, like, soliciting a prostitute or something the night before the game.
Right.
So maybe movies are a little better than real life in that story. But Elway won the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, so you can't take that away from him. But, you know, we were talking about live experiences of football games, and you were talking about your experiences in San Diego. Now, you're a Lions fan, so I don't know how this is going to – whether this will rub you the wrong way or not, being from the state of Michigan, but I'm a graduate of the Ohio State University. 5 years at OSU, I went to every home football game. And you're talking about how, like, when your team loses, maybe this is the Lions fan instinct, you kind of say, well, good game, we didn't really expect to win. Well, at Ohio State, we always expect to win. There's no excuse for losing, ever. So, you know, if you had gone to Ohio Stadium wearing a certain blue jersey, that's far less acceptable than a Lions jersey, you may have seen a completely different reaction. Have you ever been to any college games?
Oh yeah, actually. Well, it's funny because also, like, in my NFL travels, I've been to St. Louis for games. I've been to Mile High Stadium, which was great. But to me, it was more fun than the NFL experience because I feel like the crowds in NFL, like, they're respectful and they're, you know, and sometimes they're disrespectful, like Raiders fans can be. But college is a totally different game experience. And yes, I have been to some Michigan games, and I never went to U of M, right? I never went to U of M, so I really feel like I don't really care, but because it's a regional thing, growing up in Detroit and growing up in Michigan, I do root for Michigan, but also it doesn't ruin my day if they lose. So if you win, I'm happy for you too. But that rivalry is so amazing, and I've actually seen Michigan play at the Rose Bowl. I live really close to the Rose Bowl, so I will just actually go there. Like, if Michigan's playing, awesome. If not, I will go there and tailgate. There is nothing more fun than tailgating outside of the Rose Bowl with
in the golf course.
Oh my God! All over the golf course. Like, I am there. I'm there every year. I will just go just to hang out. I don't care what team is playing. It's just.
You ever go there for UCLA games?
I have not been to UCLA game. I have not been to that.
Well, that's a perfect example to go to a Rose Bowl, because you can go to the Rose Bowl and see the whole stadium for like $5 because there's only 20,000 UCLA fans there.
It's so funny. I never thought about that. Yeah, that's cool. But I just feel that the thing with the Rose Bowl is, like, such a big event, although it doesn't seem as big now. I mean, college football does bug me in terms of the way that they have no playoff system.
I think it bugs all of us. That's not just you. That's every single person involved who's not a school president.
But how is it, to me, I mean, just like, think of the money to be made from just just these simple playoffs, you know? You know what? Maybe whatever it is, I just feel this whole ranking thing, and you're going to be in this bowl, you're going to be in that bowl, is ridiculous because it's not because the team has no control over their own destiny. You know, if you win, you move on. I just don't get that. I've never understood it. It's been frustrating. It's the one bad thing about college football. But college fans are just crazy. Plus the fact that you've got it's like being in a Girls Gone Wild video with less nudity. That's what's fun about going to almost any good college football game.
Well, the drunkenness level is certainly the same. That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And I've gotten, like, I never had that type of college experience, you know. I didn't have, like, the whole frat house thing. And I went to Wayne State University in Detroit, and that's not exactly.
Oh.
They're not really known for their football there, but like.
Do they even have football at the University of Detroit? I know Dick Vitale used to coach there, right?
You know, I actually don't even know. I went there for film studies, film and liberal arts. The college experience of watching football, as you know, it's like a frat party where you get to actually have a look. There's a game in the middle of this frat party. You kind of get.
Oh yeah.
Fun. To me, it's really fun because I don't really care.
College football games are something to schedule your drinking around. Like I said, I went to Ohio State for 5 years, and first of all, there's no NFL stadium that comes even close to the size of Ohio Stadium or the Big House or, you know, Tennessee Stadium, Neyland Stadium. But those are all 15,000 seats bigger than the biggest NFL stadium. And they're something that most students on campus schedule their drinking around. You know, it's not a football game. It's an excuse to get hammered. That's just the bottom line for college football games. But the other thing, too, I think you see about it a little more, too, is there's a little more unbridled passion. You were talking about the difference between the NFL and college. A lot of these NFL tickets are so expensive. You got all these corporations who are sending their, you know, their clients to games, getting a chance to sit close to the field. Well, in college, the people close to the field are the students, and half the time they're not paying a cent because it's part of their student fees. So I think that's another reason you see such a raucous atmosphere.
Yeah, college, totally different experience and more fun to be had. I mean, it's cool to see an NFL game, but I couldn't see being a season ticket holder, A, because of the price, and B, I feel like the presentation, it's one of those things where the presentation on television for football is actually, if you really want to watch the game, is better than actually physically being at the game, unlike some other sports are actually, you know, it's good live and it's also good televised. I think football is better televised. And for me, hockey, I love hockey live. Baseball live is a different experience. It's more mellow, you know.
It's better than on TV, though. Baseball on TV is boring.
Well, yeah, unless there's something at stake. I really feel like, and for me, I'm like my least favorite sport. Not a big NBA fan. Not a big fan of basketball because I just feel
Me either.
I don't know. It's just like, yeah, well, I guess he's going to follow that guy. Oops, he pushed him.
He just took 15 steps with the ball and it's not a travel. Yeah, I don't watch the NBA because of that.
Right, that's what the NBA is missing, full contact. Why don't they just do full contact NBA? They'll put on pads, just like football players, and then actually, just it's like anything goes.
You know what, Chris? I actually remember a commercial back when the ESPN still held by hockey games. And it was a guy lining up for a putt, and it was like 10 feet away, and they had the announcers on. He's like, he's lining up for the putt. And then another golfer runs in and just shoots it out of the way like a hockey player. And then a sign comes that says, golf would be better if it were hockey.
Yeah, it would. Because anyone that's not an NHL fan, if they just go to a game live, they're like, wow, that was really amazing. I mean, you know.
They're like, wow, these guys are good athletes. Yeah, they beat the crap out of each other. They're moving 20-something miles an hour and running into hard boards.
It's incredible. So, so NHL, it's so easy to fall in love with that, but you got to see the game live. Game live. But NFL, I feel like, is better on television, actually, than it is live, because even those club-level seats, like, all right, this is nice and stuff, but I really want to, you know, see what's going on with the game, and you miss out on a lot. I feel like the modern sports stadiums, like, I'll go to Petco Park in San Diego, actually, you know, to see the Padres play. And they build it around, like, family, and they really don't want you to be bored. It's like, look, we're playing a game. Someone's going out to win this thing. Oh, so-and-so wins the car. Okay, we're going to do this. Here's some highlights on the screen. You're so afraid that the crowd at the game is going to get bored that every minute there's some new thing that they're doing.
I call it squirrel syndrome. Ooh, a shiny object. Ooh, a shiny object. Ooh, a shiny object. And that's how they keep you excited at baseball games.
Yeah, it's not. I'll tell you, I'm such a big football fan. You're gonna laugh really at me when I tell you this. This is a confession. I usually admit to something incredibly embarrassing on every episode of this show, and I'm about to tell you that I was, years ago, a season ticket holder to the LA Avengers, the AFL team. Arena football. Now, because and maybe you're like me, you're totally into the NFL, like every week you're watching games, the playoff season's amazing. After the Super Bowl is over, do you feel just a little bit depressed?
No, not just a little bit. I'm horrifyingly depressed. I have hockey season, and that's all I have to hold me up until spring football for college and then when NFL training camps report. After the Super Bowl is the worst sinking feeling you can get because you think, I don't get football for 9 months. Oh.
Good. So I know I'm not the only one. You sit there and there's like in my pit on my stomach, I feel sad, and I don't know why I feel sad. It's like it's over, and you just sort of go, you shrug your shoulders. It's like, no more football. I think it's also because football is all the holidays are around football. You know, you got Thanksgiving, Halloween, you got, you know, Christmas, you got all the great holiday stuff happening around.
Well, it's not just holiday stuff, Chris. It's a once-a-week thing. If you watch college football, it's every Saturday. If you watch the NFL, it's every Sunday. It's not like baseball or hockey or basketball where a game could be any day of the week. You literally build up in a crescendo to each game. You know, it's like a wave coming forward when you're on the beach. One wave is a game, then the next wave is a game, and the tide comes in as the season builds up. You know, and that's why football is the most popular sport in America, because it's always going as a huge anticipation. It's a roller coaster that builds up over the course of the year.
Yeah, and it's also, like, for me, like, just as, you know, like, dudes, like, my certain dude friends who I only see around then, where we watch games together, I feel like that's how a lot of men just relate. It's like, I don't want to talk about feelings or crap going out of my life.
Yeah, I don't want to watch The Notebook. I want to watch football.
Yeah, I want to talk about how that coach is an idiot for making that call, and we just sit there and yell at each other. And I don't know, this is sort of how I connect with a whole group of my friends is having that, you know, having that in common, like, every week. And, like, when it goes away, it really is depressing. So the only thing for me that could actually sort of fix that just a little bit was the Arena Football League would start literally the week after the Super Bowl was over. And tickets were so cheap. It ended up being, I had, like, front row of the second tier, and they would play at the Staples Center, the LA Avengers. And I the tickets were so inexpensive, it ended up being cheaper than going to a movie.
Well, that's not saying a lot anymore. If you go see Avatar in 3D, it's $15 a person, so.
It was less than that. It was less than that. So I would buy season tickets, and they would always throw these offers, like, they would have 2-for-1 season tickets. So I would get, like, 4 season tickets. And my friends would make fun of me, you know, that, well, why do you even have those? And then I would bring them to a game, and they would have a blast. It's basically what it is it's the video game version of football live. There's more scoring, you know.
It's an arcade football game.
It's an arcade football game, but now that, and it used to also be a farm league for the NFL, so you see some players break out, or former AFL players playing in the NFL.
Kurt Warner was in the AFL.
Kurt Warner, what is he was the Iowa Barnstormers.
Yeah, he was throwing tomato cans around his grocery store before he ended up with the Rams, and he went to 3 Super Bowls in his career.
His story is also one of those Elway type stories where it's like, you cannot write, if you wrote a movie like this, people would think, that seems so sugar coated and schmaltzy. That never happens. But
it's too good to be true. Yeah, it's one of those stories where it's too good to be true. Hey, Chris, let's keep talking here about the Super Bowl in a second. Before I do that, you want to talk about a good, fun, live experience at a football game? You hit me up this fall. I'll take you to the Ohio State Michigan game, and you'll see a real experience. That'll open your eyes. Just don't wear any blue, all right?
I'll wear blue to an Ohio State game. That'll be great.
Yeah, that'll be smart. You'll be black and blue all over when it's all said and done. But speaking of teams that wear blue, let's move on to the Super Bowl. Because let's face it, we're talking about all these depressing times when football's over. It's not there yet. So let's not bring on the depression any sooner than we have to. Sound good?
Right.
All right, well, then let's bring in Daniel Wolfe. He's the founder of National Football Authority. He's going to join us here for the Super Bowl discussion. Daniel, you there?
Yes. Hey, how you guys doing? You know what? To start, though, really quick, I was listening in for a little bit, and you guys were talking about how you're all depressed about the football season ending. I must be one of those crazy freaks, because once the offseason starts, I get super excited, and maybe it's because I'm a Browns fan, and my team's
exactly
only going to the playoffs.
You're a Browns fan. For us, it's the playoffs. For you, it's the draft.
Hey, it's been since... It's been since 1989, so, you know, my draft is my Super Bowl every year. Unfortunately, it hasn't gone as well as it is, but I'm a big fan of scouting the players that are coming up, all the different transactions, who's going to what team. That's kind of exciting to me, and that's another reason why I, too, like to play some Madden every once in a while, because I heard, Chris, you said that you were playing it, you know, just for the experience of you know, some hands-on football.
Yeah, but you're probably one of those guys that has an NFL draft cap.
Yeah, Radio City Music Hall, 2009.
Nice.
All right, well, let's get going on to the Super Bowl here, guys. Something that I know, Dan, you're not familiar with as a Browns fan, and Chris, I know you're not familiar with as a Lions fan, which me as a Steelers fan, I'm extremely familiar with it, but this is a game. We have the Patriots. We have the Giants. Oh, of course it's a cheap shot. I'm a Steelers fan. I lord these cheap shots over Browns fans. But anyways, this is a game that we saw not so long ago. Giants, Patriots. This is a game where the undefeated Patriots a couple years ago came up against an upstart Giants team who actually upset them in this game. So, I mean, Dan, you are the National Football Authority founder. Are we going to see something similar here? I mean, are the Patriots really even the favorite this time? Or are the Giants a team to beat?
Right now, I would have to say that the Giants are the team to beat. They're just running on a hot streak, and this is no disrespect towards the Patriots or anyone that's a fan of the Patriots, but they're just firing on all cylinders. If you look at the game played yesterday, you'll notice that when the Patriots were playing against the Ravens were in the game for the majority of the actual game, and there was no, like, dominant team one way or the other. And this isn't to say that the other game wasn't close with the Giants and the 49ers, but the Giants really dominated that game with Elks, Smith struggling to throw the football. And I think it really boils down to the fact that even though Tom Brady can pass for 8,000 yards in one season and 100 touchdowns, he still has to avoid that pass rush that the Giants bring, and that's going to be his toughest task because the Giants do have the second most sacks in the NFL this past season.
Well, that's the thing. That's the difference between these two teams last time they played. The Giants' defensive line absolutely harassed the Patriots into a butt-kicking where Brady didn't look like himself. And now, Chris, you were talking earlier about watching the Super Bowl and drinking a lot. I don't think I've ever drank more during a Super Bowl, except for, of course, when the Steelers were playing in it, than I did during that game, because everybody hated the Patriots. They were the bad guys. They were Iceland from Mighty Ducks 2 at the time. So, you know, in this game, I think it's going to be a little different going forward here. What are kind of your impressions of the Super Bowl here 2 weeks out?
Well, it's interesting. Like, what do you think at this point Tom Brady has to prove? I mean, you know, he's won the Super Bowl. Is he going to go after, is it really just for him about revenge against Eli Manning? I mean, that's what I think it's going to be. And it's also, like, the team, I always think that, like, you know, a team doesn't like to be favored in the Super Bowl. If you're the team that's playing, you don't want to be favored because it just gives that other team some extra fuel. It's a weird thing how you see that happen so often, especially during the regular season. Team's favored to win. This other team is just feeling, we're not getting respect, and that just adds this extra out. So, you know, I don't know exactly what people are saying, but I feel like Tom Brady's got the motivation for revenge to prove himself. And then secondly, if they're not favored, it's gonna mean something. And the thing that always bugs me about watching the Patriots play is if it's a close game, it's like they're tricking you. It's like they're just basically playing a game of chess that happens to be called football because they just get within. They almost let you think you're gonna win, and then they come in and do something sneaky, and then end up victorious. And I've seen it happen so often that the Patriots are the team that always makes me nervous. You know, because I'd like to.
Well, Tom Brady is a crusher of souls at the end of games. You give Tom Brady the ball with 2 minutes left, and he will score. There's not a question about it.
Right.
He will score. So I think there's one. We're going to go back to the cinema theme here again. So all your friends who are listening who don't like sports and love like cinema don't seem to think there's something in common. Oh, yes, there is. I'm talking about sibling rivalry. If anybody had told you 5 years ago that Eli Manning had a chance to win more Super Bowls than big brother Peyton, who everybody thinks is the better quarterback, people would have thought I was nuts, but right now, this is Eli's chance to show he's just as elite as his big brother and in position to have won more championships. And to me, that's an incredibly big storyline coming in that I haven't really heard a lot of people talking about.
Yeah, no, I love that. It's like that movie Warrior with Tom Hardy. I don't know if you've seen that film.
But that just came out. Kurt Angle was the bad guy rushing in it.
Yeah, no, oh, so great. I mean, that movie's great. I mean, the two brothers facing each other. I mean, that would be the ultimate, would be Manning versus Manning.
Well, I agree. That would have been fantastic. But, hey, you never know. Maybe Peyton will end up on the Redskins next year and at least get a couple more head-to-head matchups during the regular season. But
yeah,
Eli Manning, I mean, the younger brother becomes the bigger, overtakes the bigger brother. It's like Cain and Abel, except hopefully the Mannings don't kill each other.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'll tell you one thing. If the younger Manning wins and has an extra ring, even if the older Manning, like the doctors say he can't play, I wouldn't be surprised if he tried to put like some robotics into his neck to try to just get onto the field to try to win another Super Bowl at that point.
Is he going to go Ivan Drago on us?
Yeah, he's going to go completely Ivan Drago. He's going to be using all the highest technology of workout equipment while everyone else is, you know, out in the snow just carrying lumber around to work out.
If you're like Dan Marino, it's like at the end of Dan Marino's career, you're just looking at why is this guy still playing? Dan Marino, who appeared in the movie with Jim Carrey, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Laces out.
Yeah. but what's really sad is the way that Marino, because I always thought him as like a guy that like would be kind of like, you know, like the Terminator movie when he's kind of half meat but half metal? I always pictured Dan Marino as being that. Like, I'm never going to quit this game. I'm just going to be Robot Marino. But he lost in the playoffs, and it was like, it must have been one of the highest scoring playoff games in NFL history, but he lost, like, it was like 60 to, I don't know, but it was in the
60-17 or something. The Jaguars beat them, right? Wasn't it like an absolute butt-kicking?
Yeah. It was humiliating, where you just feel like, oh, I can't watch this anymore, but like, and that was Marino's last game. I mean,
you can see the look on his face. He just is like, F it. I'm done. I'm never going to win a Super Bowl. It's just not going to happen. I'm going to go cameo in Bad Boys 2 and sit on my pile of money on South Beach.
Yeah, and he was kind of one of those guys that he had sort of an Elway-like story. You know what I mean? Like a lot of early success in his career in the NFL and then just could never get back to the big game. I mean, it was like he was a guy that's like, yeah, you'd be happy if you saw him won because as a person, you know, I mean, that's a great story. But and I think Elway must have inspired him. You know, like, oh, okay, Elway at that age can do it. But like, man, that last game just broke my heart.
Yeah, from a practical football perspective too, Marino never had a tailback. So I mean, that's something you could always say he never had a balanced offense. But I will say one other thing too here, since I keep bringing up cinematic to sport comparisons. We're talking about Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. You know, where the laces out, misses the field goal, and he wants revenge on Dan Marino. Look at the right. Ravens and the Patriots this past weekend.
Yeah.
The shank laces weren't out, and then boom. Billy Cundiff is now the modern-day equivalent of the kicker. I just hope he doesn't have a sex change and try to get revenge.
You know what's funny is as soon as I saw that ball get kicked, that's the first thing that came into my mind was like, this is Ace Ventura right now happening live in front of me.
you know what, though? I couldn't believe that the fact that you saw everybody lined up on the field. Everybody's in position for the kick. And then you see the kicker, like, running down the field, like, in slow motion, like something out of, like, a really bad, like, Lifetime special. And I'm sitting there thinking, there's 10 seconds left of the play clock. The kicker hasn't even lined up for the kick, and they have a timeout. Why aren't they using their timeout? He's rushing, and as they hadn't yet called the timeout, I'm thinking, if they kick this, he's going to miss it. I don't know where the kicker was. I don't know if he was taking a leak behind the bench or something. I don't know what was going on. But they should have called a timeout there, no question about it.
Yeah, without a doubt.
The funny is that, like, how many people from, like, Troy Aikman was in Jerry Maguire. There's a lot of guys from sports that have actually been in movies, except I got to tell you something, they haven't exactly built careers out of it. I mean, we mentioned Dan Marino. There was Lawrence Taylor was in Any Given Sunday. But Troy Aikman, that was cool in Jerry Maguire. You know, that was a neat little cameo. And that even shows you that, like, look, there's even stories that surround the, you know, the NFL, that surround football, that aren't even necessarily about the game, that surround the game. I mean, you know, a story of a sports agent. And even that is really compelling.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but that, like I was saying before, you know, sports are a metaphor for life on so many fronts.
And you got to give it up for Mr. Jim Brown, too, seeing as how you guys were talking about Burt Reynolds earlier.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Dirty Dozen.
That's why
I got to get my Cleveland Browns in there.
The last time they were relevant? Yeah.
The sports as a backdrop just makes a great movie because it's all the things that you want to see in a film that is uplifting. That's why I think sports just a great subject for film.
Well, it's naturally dramatic, which is something I think all three of us are hoping for the Super Bowl. So, guys, let's get to the actual game here. Let's make some picks on this game here. And I want two things from you guys. I want your pick in the game, and I want your random stupid facts we're going to see. And actually, give me a third thing. I want your what you expect to be your favorite commercial? I want you to blind guess on that. So let's start with you, Dan. Picking the game, crazy thing you think is going to happen, commercial.
Oh, man, you're going to put me first? All right, picking the game.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have to go with the Giants. Commercial I'm looking forward to. I don't know if it's been actually announced that it's going to have a commercial, but if the Avengers have a new movie trailer in it, then I'm all in for that. Especially since it was filmed here in Cleveland, saw a bunch of the set pieces, talked to one of the producers. You know, I got a little connection with it, so I'm looking forward to that. As far as, like, random little fact, I was going to say Tom Brady will punt the ball, but he's already done that.
On third down, nonetheless.
I'm gonna say that the Giants are going to win in dramatic fashion in the last second again, and it's going to be just twisting the knife for it having happened a second time in a Super Bowl to Tom Brady and the Patriots.
All right, so Dan's calling another David Tyree one-handed helmet catch. It's going to be like a pro wrestling scene. The Giants are going to be down by five. They're going to be having the ball at their own 10-yard line, 40 seconds left, and then glass shatters, outruns David Tyree like Stone Cold Steve Austin, catches the ball off his helmet. Giants win. Giants win. All right, let's go to you, Kristen. Let's get your three for the Super Bowl here. Give me a winner. Give me a crazy prop bet type thing you think is going to happen, and give me a commercial you think is going to be exciting.
All right, well, first of all, my pick is going to be Patriots by three because because of what I said earlier. I really feel like especially because Tom Brady, he's out to prove himself. And I don't think they're going to be favored. I actually think that a lot of people are going to be picking the Giants. So I think that Tom Brady's going to be like, all right, go ahead, count us out. So that they always scare me. So I'm picking the Patriots. And I'm not picking – and first of all, you should know, I do not like the Patriots. I do not – I'm not a fan. Even the Boston accent bugs me. Not a big fan of New England except for maybe the chowder. And not a big Tom Brady fan. I just think that they're going to win if I have to make a prediction. In terms of the commercial, I'm going to say there's going to be probably a new commercial that we'll see for The Dark Knight Rises. I'm a big Batman fan. And oddly enough, what's really interesting is there's a scene that takes place at a football stadium that was filmed in Pittsburgh, and the football team they had is the Gotham Rogues, which has had these jerseys that kind of look like the Steelers. They're a little yellow and black Gotham Rogues jerseys. And if you've seen the trailers in the theater, you see actually the football player running past for a touchdown. Yeah, it's Hines Ward, but what's so funny is it's Hines Ward, and it's kind of a little nod to, you know, Burt Ward, who played the original Robin, unintended. And if you look in the background, those Gotham Rogues, the R looks like a little Robin. So that's going to be the commercial.
I saw that.
That's too many nerdy facts. But the stupid fact, not so much a stupid fact, I'd like to make a prediction. And I've been right. This is the prediction that every year I make about the Super Bowl. I'm right every single time. People are blown away by this. And I am happy to tell you can bet on it. The halftime show will be boring.
Is that a bold prediction?
So that is my Super Bowl prediction / stupid fact, that the halftime show will be boring. I mean, you've seen even some like they do that sort of lame concert, which ends up being a 7-minute medley of pop songs. Even bands I like The Who, when they played the Super Bowl, they were terrible. There's never been a good show. It's this same song and dance that Ice Capades on brass. It's the worst thing. It's, in my mind, like when all that nonsense happened with the wardrobe malfunction with Justin Timberlake and all that, no one saw it. No one saw it or even noticed till after. It wasn't until later when I heard about it and I went back and watched, you know, on my DVR. And, oh, well, that happened. That was kind of shocking. I mean, that halftime show is always lame. To me, it's where someone goes to the store for beer and ice, or we load up on food. Or you just tune to some other channel where they're doing some other halftime fill-in show. That halftime show
Like Celebrity Deathmatch or something at halftime, or Beavis and Butthead at halftime. Those are always great.
Those are always great, or they do the lingerie bowl. And this is how nerdy I am. I've actually shown clips from, you can buy copies of this on the internet. It's the Super Bowl, spelled S-U-P-H-E-R. The Super Bowl, it's a Super Bowl game played with all women teams.
All right.
Go ahead, Google it. I have copies on VHS from years past as a way to entertain my friends because I don't think, I mean, have you ever watched that halftime show? That's my, I wish they would take bets on it because I would win every time.
Yeah, I haven't watched the halftime show. I haven't watched the halftime show since Prince played in the Rain a few years back, which was actually one of the more decent halftime shows they've had in the last decade.
Yeah, I haven't watched the halftime shows beyond just accidental clips, like when Bruce Springsteen crotched a camera at one point. I saw that. That was funny. But other than that, they've been terrible, flat-out terrible. All right, well, let me move on here real quick. And one note on The Dark Knight Rises. My sister goes to the University of Pittsburgh, and they actually filmed a bunch of scenes literally outside her house. They parked the two or three Batmobiles that they had immediately in front of her house. She has a bunch of pictures of it. Oddly enough, they wouldn't let anybody close to them. I guess they were afraid people would steal them. Anyway, so the Super Bowl, my pick. I guess I'm the tiebreaker here since Dan took the Giants and Chris took the Patriots. So I'm rooting for the Patriots, even though I'm not a Patriots fan. One of the guys I went to high school played lacrosse with him, James Ahedebo, starts for the New England Patriots in the secondary. But I think the Giants are going to win the game for one reason and one reason only, which is, as much as I love James, the Patriots' defense is terrible. Now, I'm looking forward, and I'm going to continue the movie trend here, which I think pretty much needs to be said at this point. How many great major movie trailers have we seen during Super Bowls, right? I remember seeing Matrix Reloaded, Neo flying through the city with all the trash behind him, right? Wasn't that
the Super Bowl? I remember seeing the first Matrix trailer and wondering, what the hell did I just see? I have to see this again. So, yeah, there's been some great – I mean, the Super Bowl is like the Super Bowl of movie trailers for the summer as well.
Absolutely. Right. And, Chris, I might be going a little up the up your alley here with this one. I'm not sure. But the movie trailer I hope to see a bigger extended cut of is one that not a lot of people are talking about outside of the film community. Like, everybody's hearing about Lord of the Rings. Everybody's hearing about Dark Knight Rises. I want to see a more extended Prometheus trailer. I want me some Alien prequel.
I'm right there with you. I mean, it's like what I like about it is they're not promoting it as the Alien prequel. I mean, we know it is, but the fact that I just hope that they, because I trust Ridley Scott. I mean, he's the guy we were talking about.
Blade Runner.
Blade Runner. I mean, Ridley Scott has not made a science fiction movie in a long time, and he's a guy who's capable of making an epic. I mean, Gladiator. I defy you to watch that today. It's epic. I mean, it'll give you chills. That musical score. I mean, Russell Crowe is amazing. I mean, that film holds up. And to see Ridley Scott go back to genre, yeah, I think Prometheus is going to be great. I hope we see an extended or at least a different trailer. Last year was really cool with Captain America and Thor. I mean, I thought that was really amazing. And then Super 8. I don't know if you saw that film.
Super 8 was the movie I wanted to see the most this year. With the trailer with the train where the little wheel popped off and something exploded out. That had me so excited, which is why I was thinking movie trailers when I was talking commercials here. But so I want to see some more Prometheus. I want to see a longer cut. That has me excited more than any movie except for Batman this year.
I do like the entertaining trailers, like a lot of the comedy. I mean, like, what better type of commercial? They've got it down to the science. Beer commercials. I don't think I drink beer because of beer commercials necessarily, but I will say I'm incredibly entertained by them. And some of the most entertaining, these are like little comedy shorts. They're so well done.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you completely. And another thing, too, is that such as beer commercials, my favorite Super Bowl commercial of all time was an E-Trade commercial about 10, 11 years ago now. And it was a guy playing, like, a drum and a monkey jumping up and down next to him. And it literally went on for 20, 30 seconds, monkey jumping up and down, guy playing a drum. And the screen went to black, and it said, well, we just wasted $2 million. E-Trade, what are you doing with your money?
That's great. Also, the Bud Boggs. I mean, there have been so many great campaigns that have been amazing. Like, you know, the What's Up campaign as well. I'm sorry to bring
the Bud Bowl.
I feel like
the Bud Bowl was awesome. I agree with Dan.
The Bud Bowl, man. I want the Bud Bowl.
Oh,
bring it back.
Back the Bud Bowl. That animation was so cool with the Bud. It was so great.
Bud versus Bud Light, and then it was Bud Bowl 2 the next year. And I was only a kid when that came out, but I thought that was the coolest commercial ever. That made me so happy when I was a little kid. But I guess maybe we should do this here. So I'll throw in my stupid little fact, and we'll talk about some Super Bowl commercials here. The stupid little fact I think is going to happen in this game is I'm calling a safety. I expect a safety in this year's Super Bowl.
Really?
A safety, because I think there's going to be these two teams pass the ball so much, and they're not really good running short yarders, that if somebody gets backed up, I think somebody's going to get caught in the end zone because both teams have really strong defensive lines. So I'm picking a safety.
Wow.
Yep, right. There's a bold prediction for you.
What's going to be the most unusual bet, like sure bet? Because I love the types of bets you see in Vegas. And honestly, I've never bet on a game. I've never, other than like a friendly bet between friends, I've never actually gambled or bet on a Super Bowl or an NFL game. I've had friends that they bet every week, and it really, like, I mean, it makes the game a lot more exciting. But what are some of the more interesting? I mean, you can bet on everything from the coin toss to, you know, who's going to score first. I mean, what do you think is going to happen there?
There's all kinds of stuff you can bet on. And this is something me and my friends did the last time the Giants played the Patriots, actually. I have a big group of friends in Columbus, Ohio, who always got together for the Super Bowl. And we got a big whiteboard out, and we made what we call dollar bets. You bet a dollar on anything. It's just a dollar, right? And while I should add the disclaimer, that NationalFootballAuthority.com does not condone gambling, so this is just purely for theoretical purposes.
Right.
naturally. There you go. There's your disclaimer, Dan. But we bet a dollar on literally everything. And at one point in time, I talk a lot. I'm a loud guy. I get excited. My friends bet at one point I couldn't sing the do re mi fa sol la ti do and hit the high note in the fourth quarter. That was one of the bets.
That's a great bet because you don't know where you're going to be. You could be trashed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And if you yell about something long enough, you're just not going to have your voice. So you can bet on anything from the time of the national anthem, which I remember vividly losing when these two teams played. It was a minute 56, and I'm still mad at what's her name? Jordan Sparks, I think is her name. And then she finished the last note, and she held it for like 8 seconds, and she gets to like eight, and we're like, no! Because everybody lost a dollar. So you can bet on anything in the Super Bowl. One of my favorites to bet on is what the first score is going to be, field goal or a touchdown, because everybody wants to try to bet on it.
And you think it's going to be a safety. There you go.
That's not my first score. That's not my first score. Odds on a safety being the first score and having a 2-0 score in the Super Bowl like it's a hockey game are astronomical.
There you go. Put me down for a dollar.
Dollar? Okay, you got a dollar bet on that, Dan. Let's move away from gambling. Let's talk about some of these Super Bowl commercials. You know, we're just reminiscing about the Bud Bowl a little bit here. So let's close out here. This is today's National Football Authority podcast, which, by the way, we are joined by Daniel Wolfe. He is the National Football Authority founder, and, of course, Chris Gore, T4 TV, and the Pod Crash. A real pleasure to have you on today. But let's close out here with some Super Bowl commercials that stand out to us. Obviously, I had to talk about my E-Trade favorite. Dan, you mentioned the Bud Bowl. Chris, what's your favorite Super Bowl commercial?
I always like the Bud Frogs, and I think the What's Up thing. I liked it when I first saw it, but it was immediately created a trend that got annoying too quickly. It was from that one commercial alone, everyone, weeks after, there were parodies even on the internet and Saturday Night Live. You know, it's just that thing created a trend immediately that started hitting the zeitgeist. And there's so few things now, like, you know, pop music is so fractured. I mean, I don't know about you. I don't really listen to much pop music anymore at all.
Nope. So, or rock, because rock's terrible.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like the one thing I feel like we're all kind of connected by is this event. I mean, the Super Bowl next to Christmas. I mean, it really is America's Christmas is the Super Bowl, right?
So, absolutely.
It's one thing that connects so many people. There's so few events that actually happen from a pop culture standpoint, or, you know, and the Super Bowl connects so many people because of that. I think you can start a trend with something right away just by having a commercial like that Was Up thing. I mean, I remember it fondly, and then I remember hating it fondly directly after that.
I agree with you completely. I agree with you completely. Well, then I'm gonna leave it with this for you guys. One Super Bowl commercial that I didn't mention earlier. My second favorite Super Bowl commercial of all time, Terry Tate, office linebacker. You guys remember how long those went on for?
I was just watching one on YouTube the other day because I had to get my fix.
Oh, yeah, Terry Tate, office linebacker. He opens the fridge up. He's like, is that your food? No, that's the Memphis cake. Here comes the pain train. That was awesome. Absolutely awesome. All right, well, Terry Tate, office linebacker, is going to end the discussion of the Super Bowl because, after all, nothing is more American than Terry Tate, office linebacker. And, hey, guys, can I get a quick consensus on this? The day after the Super Bowl should be a national holiday. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Oh, definitely.
Whoever runs on the platform of make the day after the Super Bowl a national holiday gets my vote in this election this fall. How's that sound?
God, I will support that platform.
All right, I support the national holiday the day after. Call it Super Bowl Monday. That's what we'll go forward here with.
All right, well, that's it. That's all we got. You only get an hour-long discussion with Chris Gore from G4 TV's Attack of the Show. Everything movies, everything sports, and everything in between. Big thanks to Chris for coming on today. Make sure you check him out on Twitter, at ThatChrisGore. Make sure you check him out on G4 TV. And, of course, he's going to be the... I wouldn't call him the host, like I said, at the top of the show. But you can check him out on his pod crash in the next week here. He will be crashing this very episode of National Football Authority Radio. You can check out the pod crash on Twitter, at podcrash as well. And of course, I'd also like to give a big shout-out to the founder himself, Daniel Wolf. And as always, I'm your host, Matt Baxendale, at Matt Baxendale on Twitter. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Make sure you check out nationalfootballauthority.com every single day. Breaking news in the world of NFL and college football. Looking forward to the Super Bowl. Thanks again, guys. Have a great day from National Football Authority Radio.